Hello and welcome to the latest exciting installment of the Bad Wolf podcast. I'm Martin, and on this episode I was joined by one of my favourite comedians, Lucy Porter. Lucy is about to embark on a new stand-up show. I'll link all the information in the description below.
It's recording. I figured it out. That's the thing about being middle-aged now, is I don't get any of this.
No, well, because I've had to learn like really quickly. Yeah. For our podcast, you know, we have guests and that. My nightmare is always I'll lose the recording, or you know, we did one with Martin Sheen, which was like
biggest
ever. And it was, I was hosting the meeting, and at the end of it, I was pretty sure that I'd lost the whole thing. Ooh. And like, producer, I was trying not to, you know, really trying not to show the panic. And I was saying to the producer, I was like, if I've clicked on this, Amanda, what was it? And it was fine. But I just, the idea of having to sort of phone him up and go, can we do it all again? So I pressed the wrong button. It would have been awful.
Did I see you're from Croydon?
I am.
Yeah, I'm Mitcham. I was born in Croydon. Yeah, Mitcham.
But you're much younger than me, so we probably won't have anyone in common. Will we?
I'm about 5 years younger than you.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So the Blue Orchid would still have been
I was going there when I was 16, the blue school kid. As they called it. Yeah, a local reference for nobody else.
I love it. I could talk about Croydon all day. So I feel really bad, though, that I don't live there anymore, because, you know, I feel I've betrayed my parents, my roots. And all my friends who live there are like, when are you coming back? And maybe one day.
Yeah, I've not been there for ages. I live in Epsom now, so I don't really
go down that way. Yeah. Well. I'm coming to the Playhouse, I think.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I'll come and see you. So you're here to talk about your new stand-up show that launches next week, Wake Up Call. So what can you tell our audience about it?
Well, I suppose, you know, given that this is a sort of pop culture podcast, I suppose the sort of... it is a very middle-aged show. So it is for people who loved Red Dwarf the first time around.
Brilliant.
That's the sort of demographic that I'm looking for. I was saying the other day that the test of whether it's a show for you is like, are you wearing an item of clothing you bought in a garden centre? you know, is the only reason you stay up at night now if you've got a bladder infection? You know, would you rather watch the repair shop than go clubbing? So it's that kind of, you know, that's the vibe of it.
It's great being middle-aged now, because nobody really expects anything from me. Nobody expects me to show up to anything, so it's great.
Yes. Oh, God, and if you cancel plans, people are so delighted. It's that lovely thing of going, listen, I'm sorry, I can't make that thing we said we'd do, and everybody's like, yay, we stand there and watch TV.
The relief when that text comes around and says, I can't make it.
But it's always great if you're not the one who's broken the arrangement and then you can be wounded.
Oh, no.
Oh, I was really looking forward to... thing I didn't even want to do in the first place. But yeah, so I'm mostly now, I stay in and watch films with my kids, and that is bliss.
What have you been watching?
Well, we constantly watch the Marvel films on a loop, basically. We sort of watch them all and then we watch them again. Because the first time we did it, which was kind of lockdown really, we did Release Order, and then we've gone back and done chronological. Now we're just sort of picking and mixing whenever. I will only really... do Guardians of the Galaxy repeatedly. My poor husband will sit through anything, because he was in a Marvel movie.
Oh, okay.
The street cred that my kids have.
Excellent. Which one?
The worst one, Thor 2.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's, but yeah, he's in a car park. He plays a policeman and he gets thrown across the car park by Natalie Portman.
Oh, excellent. Good day of work.
I'll
look out for him. How do you write a stand-up show? I get how somebody would write a book, but what's the process for writing a stand-up show?
I mean, it's very much the lazy person's way to write anything, because you just do a little bit every now and then. And because it's stand-up, it constantly evolves, kind of just snippets and overheard bits of conversation. And it's like I have a million notes on my phone. I'll share some highlights, I'll have a little bit, I will write down something that then makes no sense to me. Voyage supplies, no idea what that is. Lasagna moussaka, that was because I had written a joke that involved the word lasagna, and then I wanted to remind myself to change it because moussaka is a funnier dish than lasagna. Cat Bin Lady, I did a mention of her. So yeah, so I just have basically loads of notes, loads of different stuff going on. I've recently got diagnosed with ADHD, which was very reluctant to do because I thought, well, I'm 49, who cares whether, you know, what's wrong with me or whatever. And it was the best thing that I've ever done because the psychiatrist who diagnosed me just basically explained my whole life to me and explained to me why I'm a stand-up comedian, because he was like, yeah, your brain cannot function in a sort of linear way and it has to sort of go off on tangents, and you know, your executive function is impaired, so you just things like losing your keys and being a nightmare about being late and stuff. He's like, basically it's not your fault. I wept with gratitude because I was so delighted to finally be absolved from just always thinking I'm a crap human being. And I was like, oh no, it turns out I'm just different and special. That's great. Loads of comedians over lockdown, given the time for introspection, got diagnosed with ADHD or diagnosed themselves. And it's been interesting chatting to like Angela Barnes and Shappy Korsandi have been really good to talk to, because it does, you sort of think, yeah, there's a reason that we all do this job, and it's because we have high self-confidence but low self-esteem and no capacity to really concentrate for long periods of time. So stand-up is just absolutely ideal because I can like write 5 minutes and then I get the instant endorphin hit of going out that night. I basically write by kind of just having an idea and then a bit later I have another one, and then I string them all together and make an hour of stuff to take to Edinburgh, and then I split it up and add some bits and make 2 40-minute halves to take on tour.
It's interesting you say about getting diagnosed with ADHD, because we recently found out my son has autism. And when I was reading like the list of traits, and I was like, oh, that actually sounds like me. Maybe I should get tested.
Exactly. Well, I think this is the thing, because it didn't exist like when I was a kid. Obviously, it didn't exist as a diagnosis. And then so many people I know, this is what's happened, is your kid gets diagnosed with something and you go, oh, okay, yeah, that explains a lot about my life. I don't know, I was kind of quite sceptical about whether it's useful to have a label and, you know, are we just kind of pathologizing normal human behavior or whatever. But actually, I think it is just useful to know yourself. It's just self-awareness, really, isn't it? And, thank goodness for our children getting us to know ourselves.
How did you get into comedy?
Loved comedy from being a kid. My mum and dad really liked Dave Allen and Billy Connolly and stuff. So that was the sort of formative influence. I was into sort of indie music and comedy in my youth. So I used to go and see the Bal and Banana was my club of choice. And I went to see like Julian Clary when he used to do the Joan Collins Fan Club, and Joe Brand and Mark Thomas and Mark Steele and Jeremy Hardy. So I just developed this passion for comedy. And then I went to Manchester University, and there was a little comedy scene growing there with people like Caroline Ahern and Steve Coogan and John Thompson. And then I was lucky enough to go and work for Caroline Ahern on the Mrs. Merton show as a guest booker, which was a phenomenal job to have. And she was so lovely and kind of encouraged me to follow my dream of writing comedy. And through that, I thought, well, I'll give stand-up a go, even though I wasn't a natural performer and I'd never done any drama or anything like that, but I'd always written. I did a little gig at Alexander's Jazz Bar in Chester, this night that was run by the Comedy Police, who are these guys who dressed up as policemen, and it was like a gong show. If you tried to get to 5 minutes of comedy, but if the audience didn't like you, then they'd go woo woo woo, and you'd be truncheoned off the stage by these two policemen. Luckily it went quite well, and so I just sort of, I kind of fell into it really. But it was, I mean, largely it was because I couldn't hold down a proper job, because I was trying to work in TV production, and it was a complete disaster because I, you know, was always late and really disorganised, and then I temped for a bit, and it was, yeah, so luckily I found comedy and comedy found me.
How do you handle heckling?
I don't get heckled anymore. I mean, in the early days, because there were sort of relatively few women doing stand-up, you would get the occasional get your tits out or, you know, make me a sandwich, which was always delightful. But these days I don't get heckled at all. I just get, you know, obviously my audience being my age, they do occasionally have to get up to go to the loo, or, you know, they make a noise when they stand up and sit down, but there's not really any heckling. It's all very good natured and polite. I think people don't heckle so much anyway now, because I think, you know, there's a bit more awareness that you're the one who's likely to look like a dickhead rather than the comedian. So.
Yeah, sure. How do you practice material? Do you do like a work in progress show?
I do sort of previews in the run up to Edinburgh where you sort of let people know that it might not be very good. But generally what I try and do is just slip in bits of material to the show and see if they work or not. The lovely thing about stand-up is it's so fluid that you can have an idea and try it out that night, and then if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, it's gone. And there's, you know, it's not like doing TV or radio or indeed podcasts where you have the luxury of editing, or, you know, sort of you have to think about, you know, what works with what. It's just give it a try, if it, you know, then you sort of you edit as you go, and it's not a pain in the ass like editing podcasts and other things is.
Obviously, you host a podcast about quizzing, so you're a big fan of
Jenny Ryan.
Yeah, big fan of quizzes. Is there any old school quiz that you would like to revive?
Well, I mean, they did Bullseye, so, you know, they, because it was the definitive, I think for all of us, it was the definitive quiz growing up.
Yeah.
Anyone my age, Bullseye, just there's something about it, the combination of Jim Bowen and the contestants and the prizes, it was all so sort of its time and lovely. And then of course darts, who doesn't love darts? So that to me is the perfect game show. But I do think Going for Gold is again something that we all absolutely loved. It was such a great concept, and I think a pan-European quiz show is what we need to heal the Brexit wound.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Henry Kelly, we interviewed Henry Kelly for the podcast, and he's still sharp as a tack and brilliant, so he could come back and do it again.
Do people pitch ideas to you for your stand-up?
Yes, or the thing that you get is people saying, oh God, you're going to use this in one of your routines, when they've just told you the dullest anecdote that you could ever possibly imagine hearing. Yeah, I mean, very little that is pitched to me makes it in, I have to say, which without being rude to anyone who has ever suggested something. But, you know, it's the thing about stand-up is it has to be so personal, I think, to work. And if it's inauthentic, I think an audience can really sniff that out. So, I mean, I do occasionally work with writers, because I think that, you know, comedy writers are brilliant, and I have myself written stuff for other people and worked with other people. There's a woman called Gabby Hutchinson Crouch who's amazing, and a man called Mike Shepherd. They will help me out and be sounding boards and write stuff based on what I've said, and that's just a joy and a delight to work with other people, because it is a bit lonely being a stand-up. That's the only thing I would say to any aspiring stand-ups out there, is the creative process can be quite painful if you really are not having ideas and you've got a show to do and it's just you on your own in a room. That can drive you slightly mad, as with all writing, but yeah, particularly with stand-up, when you know you've got to go out and do it in 2 hours.
What were the panel shows like to do? Obviously, Mock the Week is no longer with us, sadly. What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, I only did that a couple of times. It was quite sort of gladiatorial in the early days when I did it. So I can't say that was a particularly relaxing time. I think I'm much better at them as I've got older, because I'm a bit less try hard or whatever. I like ones where you don't really do much prep, like, you know, just a minute and stuff is really fun to do. And I do love doing the news quiz on Radio 4, actually. I'm a bit more comfortable on radio these days, to be honest, because I think you can be a bit more discursive, and it's less sort of gag, 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 and it's a bit more sort of flights of fancy and whimsy, which is kind of what I enjoy.
The odd thing is radio still grasps people's attention, even though people are doing other stuff as they listen. There's something about the play of the mind. I feel that audiences maybe concentrate more on radio than they do on TV these days.
Yeah, I mean, I love podcasts as well. I do feel like I am the luckiest person to have been born in this era where audio entertainment is so freely available, and you can switch from a sort of gritty true crime thing to two people talking about some, you know, obscure sitcom. In fact, Jenny Ryan, who I do the quizzing podcast Fingers on Buzzers with, we really want to do a podcast about the Croft and Perry universe. So working out where the characters from Heidi High fit in with the characters from You Rang My Lord. and oh, Dr. Beeching. And we keep saying we're going to do this because we're obsessed with Sue Pollard as much as anything else. I love the fact that it's, you know, you can delve into any aspect of pop culture, and you can also, and you do, I feel very fondly towards my favourite podcast hosts, like Phoebe from Criminal. I've never met her, but I just know that we'd get on.
Yeah, it is like you're just hanging around with mates when you listen to a podcast.
Yeah, it is like a lovely night at the pub sometimes, which is obviously something that is now less available to me in real life. So yeah, I think that's why I enjoy it.
So what's the stand-up circuit been like post-COVID?
Well, I don't know really, because I have not been... So the stand-up circuit is, you know, the clubs and pubs, and I have been mostly just doing my own little gigs in art centres and theatres and stuff. I think it's sort of back, but the Edinburgh Festival last year was kind of weird because we were all so excited about the proper festival being back on, and then nobody turned up for about the first 2 weeks. Oh. And we were like, we've all made a terrible mistake. But then it sort of picked up towards the end. But I think people are just like, I don't think it's even just my age. I think that people are a little bit more tentative about going out and, you know, making plans now. There's definitely a lot more wiggle room for cancellation, and, you know, people don't buy tickets. Oh, well, I know I don't buy tickets to stuff until the last possible minute, because I'm always thinking, well, maybe we'll get ill, or the world will end, or there'll be a train strike, or, you know. So I think that's the, you know, the whole entertainment and hospitality industry is really suffering at the minute. And, you know, I kind of 100% support the strikes, and I think the country's just in an absolute state, isn't it? Yeah. So I think comedy is suffering in the same way that everything else is, but has never been more needed, of course. And I was doing a gig with someone last night who, and I was saying, oh, you know, it's pathetic what we do, isn't it? And he was like, no, the world's so awful that, you know, comedians are basically key workers now.
Oh, like, absolutely. Yeah, we need levity.
You can say that, but it's nice to get out, isn't it?
Yeah, it's weird for me watching the railway strikes go. I worked on the railway for 11 years.
Oh, did
before
you?
Before I left, yeah. Never had a strike in that entire time. But yeah, it's weird watching, like, I see former colleagues on the news being interviewed. And
yes.
Yeah, strange.
Well, you left and it all went downhill, clearly.
Exactly. I was doing the job of four people. So what's Edinburgh like to do normally? Because it sounds like an anxiety nightmare to me.
Well, it is, but it's also the most fun you'll ever have. So it's high risk, high reward. For those who have never been, it's a month of, you know, theatre and comedy and dance and magic and everything being on in every tiny unsuitable room in the city that they can find. So like the first year I went up to the festival, I was doing a show with other comedians, and we were in the Sea Scouts meeting hall, which was cold and dry. And every now and then during the show, some Sea Scouts would just wander in and be slightly confused about what we were doing there. But yeah, it's for comedians, it's like a holiday camp, really, because you go up to the most beautiful city in the world for a month, and you get to sort of swan around looking at pictures of your own face on posters and going out drinking with your mates until the wee small hours of the morning, and then coincidentally doing a show, which, you know, is, and it brings out the best in everybody's creativity, because you go and watch other things. So I will go and watch more theatre and dance, things I would never dream of going to see in normal times, really. And I'll see all this stuff in Edinburgh, and it all feeds into your sort of creative process, and you end up going, oh, maybe I could stage my show like that dance piece, or you know, that theatre show has made me think about an aspect of my life that I'd never thought about before. It's absolutely brilliant, and it is also just a really good kind of solid drinking session for a month.
Well, what more could you want?
Exactly, it's perfect.
All right, Lucy, I know you're very busy, so I'm going to wrap it up now. Thank you so much for joining me for this.
I've got washing to sort. I've got, you know.
Same. It's actually my wife's birthday today. So,
my goodness. Thank you for taking time out to talk to me. And are you taking somewhere nice for lunch?
Yeah, we're going out. We're going out into the town.
I'll do. Well, say happy birthday from me and thank her for sparing you for the time.
I will do.
Yeah, have a lovely time.
All right. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Really appreciate it. Right, have a lovely day.
All right. Cheers. Bye.